Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
This is the American Greed Podcast, presented by CNBC. I'm Stacy Keach.
In this episode of American Greed, Brent and Tyler Cassidy, two brothers from St. Louis, are bringing a splash of showbiz to the death biz, turning cemeteries into festival sites and turning themselves into celebrities. But few know that their secret backer is their father, Doug, who is stealing millions of dollars with a little sleight of hand and age-old sales tactics.
Yeah, I think Hooters had similar hiring requirements.
His scheme cost victims an astounding $450 million, money Doug generously shares with his wife and sons. In the spring of 2008, in Blue Springs, Missouri, hundreds of people believe they have taken care of their last expense. They have chosen their casket, flowers, and music, and paid in advance for their funeral, putting their money into the hands of their local funeral home owner, Marty Myers.
Yeah, that looks good, Liz. Very good.
The people signed the contract thinking that their money was going in trust. They were entrusting Marty Myers.
But Myers puts his trust in a man named Doug Cassidy, who runs a multi-million dollar funeral business and who promises to keep the money safe. And then Myers receives the worst possible news. The money is gone. More than $450 million of prepaid funeral money is missing.
I trusted them. And they ran off with the money.
Marty Myers is on the hook for nearly $4 million of that missing money. And now he is terrified.
Everything that I owned, everything I did, they were on the line. My family was going to lose everything.
And the question is, what did Doug Cassidy do with all that money? To find out, American Greed heads to Buffalo, Missouri. A small town that, by all appearances, is still rooted in a bygone era. It is where Doug Cassidy grows up on a small farm. By the time he's in high school, life looks promising for Cassidy. He's a star athlete and has a pretty girlfriend named Rhonda. Later, Doug and Rhonda marry, and they get out of Buffalo as fast as they can. After Cassidy gets a law degree, they move to Springfield, Missouri, where, as an up-and-coming young lawyer, he can afford a big house. He starts an investment club. And that's when people get to know the real Doug Cassidy.
Matthew Villicana works for the United States Postal Inspection Service.
He was the kind of guy that really wanted everything, and he wanted it now.
His investors claim he lies and steals their money. And eventually, Cassidy is indicted on charges of conspiracy and tax fraud. He pleads guilty.
He was always a con man. He was always looking for a fraud.
After serving 6 months at Marion, Illinois Federal Penitentiary, Cassidy is a disbarred lawyer looking for a new future. He sets his eyes on what is called the death care industry and takes over a business that sells prepaid funeral contracts. Pay now, die later. And the cost of the funeral is covered. The company is called National Prearranged Services, known as NPS. And in that move, Cassidy steps into a highly lucrative, growing business.
Daniel Issard is a funeral home financial and management consultant.
Somewhere between 25 and 28% of all funerals conducted in the course of a year are prearranged and pre-funded funerals.
Cassidy sets up his headquarters outside St. Louis in the suburban city of Clayton and hires door-to-door salesmen to sell what are called pre-need contracts. The salesmen tell customers that prearranging a funeral is a selfless act of love, a way to avoid confusion and chaos at the time of a death.
What is being exploited is grandma's fear of death, grandma's fear of what her death will do to the family. It's very, very easy to sell us a bill of goods that says, you won't have to think about it and everything will be just fine. Here, sign this.
And Cassidy's door-to-door salesmen clean up selling the pre-needs.
We saw NPS almost like gypsies. They would go into a town, they would start writing pre-needs with consumers, and they would go to the funeral home and say, I have 50 pre-need contracts I just wrote.
The funeral home is grateful to have a lock on the future business. And Cassidy makes a promise to take care of the money.
In the early 1990s, I would get phone calls from clients that we were serving in Missouri. And they would tell me that they're doing business with this new company called NPS. And I'd ask a simple question, how is the money invested? And I would get the telephone equivalent of a shrugged shoulder. So I called up NPS and I said I had some questions about the company and how they were investing the money. And I got a very simple answer from the voice on the phone. It's none of your damn business.
But it is the state of Missouri's business. And in 1992, the Attorney General charges that National Prearranged Services accounts are short millions of dollars. And suddenly, local reporters like Mike Owens want to talk to Doug Cassidy.
We had been trying to interview him for about 3 weeks. You finally say, well, I'm gonna ambush the guy. I'm gonna sneak up on the guy. We're gonna do the interview and be done with it.
Now retired, Owens watches his 1993 story and is amused by his encounter with Doug Cassidy.
We got a picture of him on a cell phone. And you know, cell phones were not that common back in 1993. They were expensive.
Surprisingly, Cassidy stops and tells Owens the state is wrong about the NPS accounts.
They are not underfunded. I do know, as a matter of fact, that they are overfunded, not underfunded.
Cassidy also tells Owens that he is not in charge of NPS. He says he is a consultant. When Owens asks why NPS owns Cassidy's house, Cassidy has an unexpected answer.
We rent that house.
And how much is the rent?
You'd have to ask my accountant. I'm not sure.
Before the interview ends, Owens brings up one last topic. Cassidy's 1982 felony conviction.
That happened over 11 years ago, and Mike, I'm not seeking publicity. I'm a private person, and I really disgust me that, you know, you would use something that happened 11 years ago to try to hurt me personally. I have lived a very upright life for the last 11 years, and I'm proud of that.
But that conviction hangs over Cassidy because it prevents him from working in the insurance business, and that means he cannot publicly run NPS. It means that he needs to call the shots from the background. And he puts his 23-year-old son, Brent, out in front.
This whole situation, we're right, they're wrong, we represent the consumer.
Charles Birmingham is an assistant U.S. attorney.
Brent takes on a prominent role at an incredibly young age, almost fresh out of college, and ends up, in later stages, becomes the face, the public face of NPS.
Doug is not even an owner of NPS. The business is owned by a trust that benefits his wife, Rhonda, and his two sons, Brent and Tyler. But everyone at NPS knows who's in charge.
It's all Doug. All Doug all the time. He's directing the whole show, as he has all along. You know, he can say that he's got a president and a vice president, and this kid's running this. He was the mastermind.
Eventually, Cassidy answers the state of Missouri's complaint by agreeing to keep customers' funeral money safe in a bank trust account. But as anyone who saw his interview knows, Doug Cassidy can be slippery with the truth.
We rent that house.
By 1997, in small towns across Missouri, salespeople for National Prearranged Services have sold tens of thousands of funeral contracts. NPS appears to be thriving.
They have full-page ads in every funeral home magazine. They're at every major convention.
And front and center at NPS is Brent Cassidy, now the president of the company.
I know the questions always ask, what makes your company unique?
And as the company thinks about how to expand, Brent comes up with the idea to hire a new sales team, mainly women, mostly young and attractive.
Yeah, I think NPS and Hooters both had similar hiring requirements.
They become known as the NPS girls, real standouts in a male-dominated industry.
If you attended a convention that they were exhibiting at, and you'd see a booth filled with 10 girls dressed, not provocatively, but dressed with a subtle form of sensuality. It was, I think, an embarrassment to the rest of the vendors.
But sexy sells, and the NPS girls will not sell to grandma in her kitchen. They will sell directly to funeral home directors, who will then sell NPS-backed pre-need funeral contracts to their customers.
Joshua Slocum is the executive director at Funeral Consumer Alliance.
It's the funeral directors who have access to the consumers. It's the funeral directors who, you know, may have buried three generations of the Collins family, right?
And that's why the NPS girls head out to small rural towns across the Midwest.
When you go through these towns, you're going to find a gas station, a church, a diner, a funeral home, and good people. And the good people ran these funeral homes. And these were people that built a family name within that community. And that's all they had.
In Mount Vernon, Illinois, that family name is Huey. Carmen Huey Dykeman took over the Huey Funeral Home when her father died. And she runs the business just as he did.
We're there for people at, you know, one of the worst and hardest times of their life. And, you know, we meet them at the door when they've just lost the most important person. We have tears, we have, you know, hugs.
Many of the families Huey serves are people who have eked out a living from the farms nearby, like Farrell Payne, whose parents were farmers. They are people for whom watching every nickel is a way of life.
It's just a part of our heritage that you pay your bills. If you don't have what you want, you save for it.
And now his parents have enough money saved to prepay their funerals.
They knew it was expensive, but they also knew that the cost would be on their family if they didn't do it. They wanted to have control of what happened to them.
And
is this real wood here?
That is solid poplar. Mm-hmm. This is really pretty here.
Mm-hmm. When everything is added up, the funeral for Payne's mother Nellie will cost $7,389.
The concrete grave liner is $690.
What Payne is actually buying on behalf of his mother is a life insurance policy. When she dies, the cash benefit will cover the cost of her funeral. Huey sends Nellie Payne's money to NPS.
I just figured that a policy was bought for the person with those funds, and it was growing and just right there for when they needed it.
But what Huey doesn't know is that the company that issues the policy, Lincoln Memorial Life Insurance, is owned by a trust held by Rhonda, Brent, and Tyler Cassidy, and run by Doug Cassidy. And it is actually more than a life insurance company. It's a fraud factory. Inside Lincoln Memorial, in assembly line fashion, are data clerks with bottles of whiteout, altering insurance applications. Here is Nellie Payne's application. The policy is paid in full. That's why it says SP, single pay. But here's the application after it gets the Doug Cassidy whiteout treatment. Now Nellie is on a monthly pay plan, payable over 60 months, 5 years. And remember that Nellie paid $7,389. But here that number is gone, and the amount paid is just 1 month's premium, a mere $293.35. With this simple trick, Cassidy can pocket $7,000 of Nellie Payne's money. And if regulators raise questions, there is an application on file that looks entirely legit.
There was people in St. Louis and people in Austin, Texas, doing that every day for 7, 8, 9 years. And that is how they did Illinois business. Insurance applications were systematically and regularly whited out so they could steal the insurance premiums.
Making the con even more cunning is that the people who are hired to white out the contracts are told they are merely correcting an error made in the field.
These were people who didn't have the best education, and this was the best job that they ever had. So they went ahead and did that. They were unwitting participants in a very major fraud.
But with the whiteout trick, a Ponzi scheme is born. Because to keep an insurance policy active, Cassidy now has to make monthly payments on each of the policies he alters. And the only way to fund that is to get new business. As the 1990s come to an end, it's clear the Cassidy family has come a long way from Buffalo, Missouri. Doug and Rhonda own a picture-perfect house in a wealthy suburb of St. Louis. It is so impeccably decorated, it even merits a spread in Traditional Home magazine. Doug looks like a lifelong member of the moneyed class.
He's got the million-dollar smile, he's got the coiffed hair, he's got the nice suits.
And his two good-looking boys, Brent and Tyler, complete the portrait of a hugely successful all-American family.
It was important to those guys to have a veneer of respectability. They knew what they were doing was sleazy. But if they spent enough money the right way, with the right charities, with the right people, they could cover this criminality with this respectability. And they did that to a great extent.
And at considerable expense. Their individual monthly American Express bills routinely exceed $30,000. For things like an $11,000 shopping spree at Polo for Rhonda, $17,000 worth of jewelry for Doug, $6,000 worth of movies and games for Tyler, and $31,000 for a vacation in the Caribbean for Brent. The attitude toward the American Express cards might be best expressed by Rhonda when she is questioned in a video deposition for a civil lawsuit.
Now we see the Rob and Stuckey furniture purchase, January 30th, 2006, of $10,354.08. See that?
Yes.
You didn't even know how much money you would put on these charge cards every month, did you? And the reason you didn't know is because you didn't care.
Well, I don't think that's a fair statement.
Sure. All you cared about was that the next time you used your American Express card, it would be accepted and you'd be allowed to keep charging.
Yes.
And where does much of the money come from to pay the American Express bills? From NPS, whose customers were promised their money would be safe until the day it is needed for their final expense.
Travis Ardrey is a special agent for the IRS.
You look at the website, it says your money will be held in trust or in insurance. I mean, there was never a third option of we're going to take it and use it for our own personal use and pay it back whenever we want.
And there is certainly no option for throwing their money around Hollywood where 29-year-old Tyler Cassidy decides to make his mark in the family death business. This is Hollywood Forever Cemetery. In 1997, it was called Hollywood Memorial Park, a bankrupt, rundown cemetery where some of Hollywood's great legendary celebrities are buried. Director Cecil B. DeMille, Douglas Fairbanks, and Hollywood's first male sex symbol, Rudolph Valentino.
So there is intrigue and mystery to be found in death, right? And when you've got a cemetery where famous silent movie stars and golden era picture stars are buried, I mean, it's a natural, right?
Tyler Cassidy looks at the ruins and sees potential. He buys the cemetery, renames it Hollywood Forever, and begins to turn both the cemetery and himself into a national news story. As soon as he can, he begins staging media events. A memorial for Valentino's death draws a huge crowd. And recognition for a star once not allowed to be buried here brings in the television cameras. At all the events, Tyler assumes his role as host.
You can walk across these beautiful grounds and read the story of this place. It's etched in stone.
Described as impossibly handsome, he is a natural on camera. And when Tyler talks, people listen.
That's something I like to think of as 20th century magic. And the best name we have for it is Hollywood.
What he preaches is that cemeteries should be for the living, not just for the dead.
We are here to fulfill our purpose as cemeterians, and that is to create a place for you.
In a fierce break with tradition, he opens the cemetery to all kinds of events, showing horror films on the wall of a mausoleum. The film screenings, called Cinespia, become a huge summer-long sensation in Los Angeles, and Tyler's popularity grows. He goes on to host one of the largest Day of the Dead festivals in the country. The news media is captivated by Tyler. He is the cemetery kid. His story is covered in Forbes, The Atlantic, and The New Yorker. In 2000, Tyler reaches near celebrity status when he is featured in an HBO documentary, The Young and the Dead. Viewers see a smart, confident young man with a bold vision.
Death isn't funny. It's the most serious thing we face. It's the most mysterious thing. You can treat it with nonchalance, or you can treat it as though it's something very sacred. And I think humor doesn't make something less sacred.
The cultural stereotype that we have of undertakers is this dour, black-suited, you know, very buttoned up, right? And to a large extent, that is true. When you see somebody young, attractive, with interesting ideas that they describe in a really interesting and compelling way, it's like a breath of fresh air.
But in all the coverage Tyler receives, there is no mention that millions of dollars for his radical ideas come from a world as far away from Hollywood as one can imagine. It's money that comes from the checking accounts of middle to low income people who are just trying to take care of what happens at the end of life. They don't know that NPS is paying for Tyler's $800,000 house in the Hollywood Hills, or paying for his $72,000 BMW, or that their money is paying to prop up his sensational business. They were told that their money would be safe in a bank trust account or insurance policy.
Whether it's on a daily, weekly, or monthly basis, you see wire transfers, $50,000, $80,000, $120,000, and being sent directly to the bank accounts of Hollywood Forever.
Later in documents and a deposition for a civil lawsuit, Tyler Cassidy defends the use of the NPS pre-need customers' trust money for his business, arguing it was a good investment.
We had promissory notes. We had payment schedules. We paid according to those promissory notes and payment schedules.
If I walked in and said, you want to buy a pre-need plan, okay, so you're going to pay me $10,000 for that pre-need plan, but I'm going to go loan it to my son so he can, you know, develop his dream. Now, we may pay it back, may not, who knows? Is that something that you do? Most people wouldn't. Most people are like, no, get out of my house.
Nantucket in August. Once a quiet hideaway for old money, the island is now attracting new big money. And Doug and Rhonda Cassidy are riding the wave in grand style. The house they buy overlooking Nantucket Harbor makes a bold statement about the extraordinary success of Doug Cassidy.
This was the ultimate landing spot, Nantucket, for Doug Cassidy. He'd made it. For a guy from Buffalo, Missouri, to end up in Nantucket, most people would shake their heads and say, how did that happen? Especially if he's a convicted felon already.
The answer, of course, is that he gets here by stealing. A portion of the money for the multi-million dollar house came straight from, you guessed it, the trust accounts filled with money for funerals. And while Doug and Rhonda mingle with their yacht club friends, back in St. Louis at NPS, there is a daily struggle to meet the payments that are due.
The Cassidys were doing well. NPS was never doing well. They were always one step away from collapse.
And that is why they need to sell.
Sell. That's what they had to do to survive. Not only to line their pockets, but just to keep the fraud going.
And they are selling to people who are easy targets.
Funeral directors tend to make decisions on vendors in a very simple fashion. They don't look at financials, they don't look at blue books, they don't look at ratio analysis. It's based upon relationships.
And before long, the kinds of relationships the NPS girls are cultivating become a topic in the industry. Nan Fowler is a former NPS girl. She became aware of the reputation some of the girls had while she was working with them at an industry convention.
I was working the booth, and I had a funeral director who I didn't even know from, you know, whatever state, come up and say, I hear you guys, you know, are great partiers. Where are you going tonight? Some of the gals, they would go out and, you know, they would have a good time.
Funeral home consultant Dan Issard claims that a few of his customers confessed to him that things with the girls went too far.
They would appeal to some funeral directors that maybe no one has ever hit on before. And when you figure how much money these girls were making, some of them decided to go the extra yard to get the account.
The NPS sales tactic works, and the girls bring in millions of dollars. By 2006, the company boasts that it has served 340,000 families and has paid $120 million in claims. But the big secret, of course, is that Cassidy is running a Ponzi scheme. And at his insurance company, the hunt is always on for cash to keep the fraud alive. Now Cassidy's team is taking out loans against customers' policies without their knowledge. It all looks legitimate on paper. A customer in Ohio buys a policy paying in full more than $8,000. 3 months later, NPS takes close to $6,500 from that policy in the form of a loan, leaving just under $1,800, not nearly enough to cover her funeral. And the customer in Ohio has no idea that her money has been taken.
They're not doing this one at a time. They're doing it, you know, 5,000, 10,000 individual policies at a time. So the policy loans are figures like $2 million, $3 million, $5 million.
Eventually, Cassidy and his team will take $130 million in loans against customers' policies. And when regulators in Ohio are tipped off about the loans, Doug and Brent think they have a simple answer.
They take all the policy loans on Ohio policies, and they transfer them to other states. And they do that for all the Ohio policies, so they can then write a letter to the regulators saying, there are no policy loans on Ohio policies.
Maybe the Cassidys think they are fooling Ohio regulators, but it is really the people in small towns across the Midwest who are most in the dark. They think the money they spent for their funerals is being kept safe by NPS. They have no idea that they are really helping the Cassidy family buy a big, beautiful house on Nantucket.
It's infuriating. It's infuriating as a consumer advocate, and it's infuriating as a human being that you can do this to other people. The people who prepay for their funerals are generally middle-class people or poor, right? They are people who take care to spend their money wisely to the degree that they can, and it's disgusting how easy it was for them to take advantage of those people.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you'll come in tomorrow at 10 o'clock, we'll discuss it and assure of you that we'll take, you know, great care of your loved one and make sure everything is the way he wanted it.
In 2007, while Doug Cassidy is long gone from the small towns of Missouri, funeral director Marty Myers is hard at work in the business he entered when he was just 12 years old.
When I was in the seventh grade, I was a trumpet player in the band, and the local funeral director asked if I would be willing to play taps for veterans, and got paid for it.
What he sees in that experience makes a lasting impression.
I've never been in any business or seen any business that a family pays you and they thank you and they're so grateful for what you do for them.
Out of high school, Myers heads to mortuary school and begins working at funeral homes around Kansas City, dedicating his life to his customers.
I'm here for them. I miss birthdays. I miss Christmas, you know.
For more than 20 years in the business, he wants only one thing.
I always said I wanted my own place. That was my goal.
Finally, in 2007, he has enough cash and enough loans to put in an offer to purchase two funeral homes. As a condition of the purchase, Myers is required by law to sign an agreement saying he will honor the funeral home's existing pre-need contracts.
Basically, when you do that, you're on the hook. You have to do it, and the state required that we did it.
700 of the contracts, totaling close to $4 million, are with NPS. And at the time, Myers has no reason to worry. He's been dealing with NPS contracts for years.
They would pay him. It was not really a big deal. We would send in the contract, that they had. Within 30 days, I had a check with growth from NPS.
But the checks from NPS are the products of a fraud that is nearly out of control. Now it is becoming impossible for NPS to come up with the millions required each month to pay the loans taken out on customers' policies. There is just one answer. Throw out the policies with loans. They can do that by surrendering the policies and replacing them with new policies without loans.
Surrender is a surrender. It's as if the policy never existed. Obviously, they never tell the funeral home and individual that their policy has been surrendered.
In 2007, in order to keep their house of cards standing, Cassidy and his team surrender 56,514 policies.
The surrenders were the last bit of the fraud, a reflection of the Ponzi scheme collapsing.
But across the Midwest, funeral homes receive statements showing that all is good. Their customers' money is growing.
On this particular one, with all the contracts, there was... the inflation amount was $567,000. That's how much each of these had grown. We got this every month, and so had no reason to believe that something was wrong. The money is growing, and there's no problems.
In Blue Springs, Marty Myers also knows nothing about the financial problems at NPS. And at the start of 2008, he closes on his funeral homes.
Oh, it was the greatest day of our lives, other than my children being born and getting married to my beautiful wife. You know, we were ecstatic. I finally got and did what I said I was gonna do. And so that day came to fruition. And then 3 months later, it all went south.
Whether you're making the same breakfast that you have every day or baking a cake for an extra special day, eggs are a staple in our diets. Eggland's Best eggs are nutritionally superior to ordinary eggs, containing more vitamins and 25% less saturated fat. Not only are they better for you, but Eggland's Best eggs taste better too. There's a reason that they're America's number one eggs. Visit egglandsbest.com for additional information and delicious recipes.
In April 2008, Doug Cassidy gets bad news. It took a while, and he got away with a lot, but finally state regulators begin to ask questions, and the truth about his operation is out.
There's no money in any part of what was represented to the funeral homes and the customers. There's no money safe and secure in insurance policies. There's no money safe and secure in bank trust.
It was a business model of fraud. It wasn't something that collapsed because there was mismanagement. It wasn't an attack by a competitor. It was by design a fraud to line the pockets of those people that stood to benefit the most. And that was Doug Cassidy and his family.
The total bill for the fraud is more than $450 million. For Marty Myers, who was holding close to $4 million in NPS contracts, the news is devastating.
None of us knew whether we were ever going to be paid. I got people coming in with these contracts. I'm not going to get paid for them. It was going to put us under.
A few months later, there is a partial rescue. State insurance guarantee funds that pay the bills of insurance companies that become insolvent step up to pay funeral homes what customers paid, but not the inflation factor that NPS promised. And because he signed that agreement saying he would honor the NPS contracts, Myers is legally stuck with hundreds of contracts like this one. Written in 1982, the customer paid $3,075 for a funeral that today costs $10,000.
This gentleman was born in 1942. If he lives to be 100, that's 2,042. What's a funeral going to cost in 2,042? A lot more than it does today, and we're still going to get face amount of $3,075. This firm could potentially, over the next 20 years, lose somewhere in the vicinity of $7 to $10 million off these contracts. And that's our hit. That's not the consumer's hit. That's the funeral home's hit. The consumer's going to get what they paid for, as long as I'm alive.
In Mount Vernon, Illinois, months after the NPS collapse, Carmen Huey Dykeman learns how customer Nellie Payne's application was altered.
I just couldn't believe it. I mean, I saw my contract there, the way I filled it out, and then the way it was changed. I just couldn't believe it. I don't know how they could live with themselves, you know, knowing that they're taking this person's money and putting it somewhere else. It's just unimaginable.
But Carmen, like many others stuck holding the bag, continues to honor her NPS contracts. And she does so at a huge loss for her small business.
It'll be maybe $5 million before it's over. I mean, that's a rough estimate, but I would say it would be close. And I will probably not be here when the last one goes through the office.
In November 2010, the U.S. Attorney's Office indicts six officials of NPS, including Doug and Brent Cassidy. It's a 50-count indictment charging wire, bank, mail, and insurance fraud.
I was thrilled in 2010 when they got indicted. It was like manna from heaven, because for years I'd been saying terrible things about these guys, and finally the United States government agreed with me.
Doug Cassidy pleads guilty to directing all aspects of what is called a Ponzi scheme, including whiting out the policy applications and taking money from customers' accounts for his personal use. He is sentenced to 9 years, 6 months. Cassidy agrees to be interviewed by American Greed, but the Marion Federal Penitentiary Warden does not allow the interview. And so, Cassidy writes to us by email and defends the NPS business plan as legal. He writes that he pleaded guilty only because prosecutors offered to let Rhonda keep her house and Tyler free of charges. If he doesn't take the deal, the entire family would be destitute. Brent Cassidy also pleads guilty to his participation in the fraud and is sentenced to 5 years.
Brent was the only one that apologized, and I felt extremely sorry for his wife and daughters, because I feel like that his dad took him down a wrong road.
Rhonda and Tyler Cassidy are not accused of wrongdoing and are not indicted. Later, Tyler tells lawyers in a deposition he regrets his use of NPS money.
Hollywood Forever didn't go to banks for its money, did it? What you're saying is, in retrospect, you wish you had done it differently.
That's very true.
But at the time, you knew it's Trust for monies that are propping up Hollywood Forever.
At the time, yes.
Today, Doug Cassidy is in the federal penitentiary in Marion, Illinois, where he served his first sentence more than 20 years ago. For a moment, he made it into the high life and then ended up right back where he started, hurting the small town people he so desperately wanted to get away from.
This is who Doug Cassidy is. This is where he grew up. This was his real playground. This is what Doug Cassidy understands. I think that's kind of the ironic part of this whole thing. On his way up the ladder, he was stepping on the people that he once lived with. Doug Cassidy was doing that.
Thanks for listening to the American Greed Podcast, presented by CNBC. I'm Stacy Keach.
Whether you're making the same breakfast that you have every day or baking a cake for an extra special day, eggs are a staple in our diets. Eggland's Best eggs are nutritionally superior to ordinary eggs, containing more vitamins and 25% less saturated fat. Not only are they better for you, but Eggland's Best eggs taste better too. There's a reason that they're America's number one eggs. Visit egglandsbest.com for additional information and delicious recipes.